This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. When you see a bee in your yard, do you quickly scurry as far away from it as possible? Or might you choose to stand quite still while giving thanks for all that she's been doing? Why would you do that second thing, you ask? Well, according to some researchers, upwards of one-third of the world's food supply is dependent on pollination, and bees do the majority of that pollinating. Of course, honey and beeswax are useful to many, and since the time of the ancient Egyptians, bees have been celebrated in a variety of ways for a variety of reasons across the globe. Still not convinced? Well, three Virginia beekeepers are here to tell us more, including how each of them absolutely fell in love with bees. It's a love story we're thinking could touch your life, too, if you stay tuned through the news.
Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Keeping bees is our focus today. And if you've got thoughts about it, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or if you prefer all numbers, 888-967-2825. Here to help three Virginia beekeepers with a wide range of expertise. Entomologist Amanda Rose Newton does her beekeeping near Lexington, Virginia. She's also a cooperative extension agent for Rockbridge County. Ann Harmon is a beekeeper in Rappahannock County, as well as past president of the Virginia State Beekeepers Association. And Bill Tice, president of the Shenandoah Valley Beekeepers Association, does his hive work near his home near Bridgewater, Virginia. Thank you all for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Well, Amanda Rose, let me turn to you first. You've been studying the science of all sorts of insects for some time in a number of different places around the country. What is it about bees that you suspect most people do not know that you think it might be really good if they did know?
Oh, there's numerous things. But one thing, like I was telling them earlier, is always one of my pet peeves. It's just that wasps, hornets, and bees are distinctive things. We have native bees in Virginia that are great and beneficial for pollination as well. Honeybees aren't doing the job by themselves, though I don't want to detract from their importance because they are incredibly important.
And I'm going to put in a word for the yellow jackets and the wasps because they are extremely beneficial and are frequently confused with honeybees, which is somewhat detrimental to the honeybees. The yellow jackets have an entirely different lifestyle, but need to be protected as well as the honeybees.
That's true. And if you see a beehive in the ground, it's most likely not a honeybee nest. It's going to be a hornet or a wasp nest. Honeybees prefer high in the trees, actually. Higher the better. Or if you see a swarm, a cluster of bees, this is the prime swarming time of the year in Virginia. If you see a swarm of bees, maybe the size of a basketball hanging on a tree limb, those are probably honeybees, most definitely.
Bill Tice, you're the newest at this. I think you've got about 6 years' experience in beekeeping. Ann Harmon, who's sitting next to you, has got several decades, and I think Amanda Rose has got about a decade and a half, and then even before that, as a small child, at her grandfather's knee when he was raising bees. But let me ask you this question first that I hope to hear from all three of you. What is it that fascinates you about bees?
For me, just working with them is very interesting because I actually can tell that they recognize me. They know who I am. And that to me is pretty amazing that an insect with the brain the size of a pin has that capability. Also, their social interactions. I have an observation hive. I can watch them. And the more I learn about them, the more fascinated I become with them. So that's my story.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll go further on the whole personality aspect of it. You can have several dozen different hives and not every single one is going to act the same way. So it's kind of neat that they all have their little quirks and you know when what time not to bother this hive versus that hive. And also there's a difference between breeds of bees too. I have the Italians as well as some Russians, and their behavioral differences are also really fascinating to get to know.
And the other thing is, every time you open a hive, you will probably learn something new that you didn't know before.
Oh, so tell us some of the things that you've learned.
Well, you can have a hive that has been quite peaceful in the past. You open it, and it is not at all peaceful and quiet, and you look. The queen is there. Everybody seems to be working. It's a beautiful day. The weather is fine. Why are the bees a little bit crabby today? And you can ponder that, and you may not find the answer to it. So it's an endless learning experience with bees.
I understand, Ann Harmon, that you fell in love with bees around the age of 4, maybe as old as 5. And you were, this is maybe the 1940s, a child in growing up in the Washington, D.C. area when it was a bit different than it is today, when there were lots of flowers and bushes, many more than perhaps today, that bees spent a lot of time at. Tell us about this childhood love of yours. What did you do with bees, and why were you so attracted to them and they so attracted to you?
Well, first, a bee that is out foraging, visiting flowers, will not sting unless it's really bothered or injured. And I was fortunate to live in a nice place in Washington, D.C., where flower gardens were plentiful. And I noticed the bees going from flower to flower. And thought they were very pretty, and I could help them by catching them on one flower and putting them on another flower. But I realized they were small, and I didn't wish to hurt them, so I never was stung. You have to do it carefully. I probably could do it today.
So you were 4 years old
yes.
and helping bees by putting them in your hand and taking them one to one flower to the next. And it never occurred to you that this might be a painful experience.
My mother shouted at me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm helping bees." And she said, "You'll get stung." And I wasn't a particularly cooperative child. I simply said, "No, I won't." But, of course, I didn't know at that time why I would not get stung.
Keeping bees is our focus today. So to you who are listening, is this something that you've ever done yourself, thought about doing, know someone who's been doing it? 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. That's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Our guests, beekeepers Amanda Rose Newton, Ann Harmon, and Bill Tice. And we have this on our Facebook page already. This is from Jessica, who says, "Do we really need to worry about Africanized honeybees, or is that just media hype?"
I can handle that one. I have worked with African bees in 10 countries, and I am still alive. If you want to know the ultimate range of African bees in the United States, the correct answer would be, we don't know. Although they're a tropical bee, we have had a new find in Colorado where they overwintered, and Colorado does have a temperate climate with cold winters. The African bee is a survivor bee. It is very adaptable. So to make a prediction where it will live is impossible. Can we live with African bees in the United States? The beekeepers will change. The beekeepers who are now keeping the European stock bees will probably stop keeping bees. But then a new group will come who have never kept bees, and they will learn how to keep African bees. It will be a problem in cities because African bees can live anywhere. They can live inside of lampposts, flower pots. So it can be a definite problem in urban and suburban areas.
Yeah, that's definitely right. In fact, I just moved up here recently from Georgia, where there's quite a few down there in certain areas, and you would find them in the craziest places. Sewer systems were really popular for them for some reason. So, yeah, they can live just about anywhere.
Are they a danger? Are they dangerous to humans, to animals, to pets?
Most definitely. they are.
So if we had had them back in the 1940s when you were taking bees by hand from flower to flower, you might have been in a bit more danger than with the honeybees that you were dealing with back then.
Not necessarily, because the African bee out foraging is exactly like our honeybees out foraging. They have nothing to defend but themselves. So you are at no risk with the African bee out foraging.
So in what way is there more danger?
The danger is two things. One, their choice of nesting places. And two, any disturbance of any kind can produce thousands and thousands of bees pouring forth, ready to sting people, animals, and such. That is a different behavior. The African bee is related, but its behavior is quite different.
Jessica, thanks so much for that question. We've got some calls coming in now, so let me remind anybody who's just joined us that we do take calls on Virginia Insight, and we're talking about keeping bees today. Anything bee-related, questions or comments, welcome at 888-WMRA-TALK. Let's go next to Harrisonburg. Steve, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Amanda Rose Newton, Ann Harmon, and or Bill Tice, please.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Oddly enough, I was spending a lot of time yesterday trying to figure out where I can buy locally pure beeswax, and I have not succeeded in finding it in any store here, and I was hoping that maybe a local beekeeper would be around who might sell the stuff. I'm trying to make my own wood finish.
Yeah, it works great for a wood finish. I'm a woodworker, and it's a phenomenal finish. I have some beeswax if you would like some. The only place I know of where you can buy it here in the Valley is at Valley Bee Supply in Fishersville.
Okay. And Valley Bee Supply. And do you sell it in your place in Bridgewater?
I have about 10 pounds currently. I don't have a lot of it, but I don't know how much you want. But if you...
I'm looking for about a half a pound or a pound.
Okay. You know. Well, if you want to get in touch with me on our website, shenvalleybeekeepers.org, I'd be happy to provide that for you.
Okay. Valley Beekeepers.
Shen? That's S-H-E-N?
Yeah. Shenvalleybeekeepers.org.
Great. All right, I shall do so. Thanks so much.
Sure. Steve, thanks for your call. So for you who are listening, how do you feel about bees? Do you find that you love honey but avoid its creators whenever you see them? Or are you one of those people, like some of our guests, who have long been enchanted by these creatures? If you've got a perspective to share, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and we will be back in just a bit more than 1 minute.
tell you about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees, the moon up above, and a thing called love.
Dean Martin may not have been thinking about a love affair specifically with bees, but that idea does seem appropriate this hour. If you, like our guests, absolutely associate bees and love, Bill Tice is a beekeeper in Rockingham County. Amanda Rose Newton does hers in Rockbridge County, while Anne Harmon currently does much of her work with bees at her home in Rappahannock County. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And Annie Harmon, you also teach people about bees at a facility in Culpeper County.
Yes, that is correct. I teach beekeepers, of course, but the bees are on a facility that was once a farm and is now where Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, various youth groups, church groups can come and enjoy the outdoors. And the beehives are part of that. The children that come in groups come into the bee yard and are introduced to the life of the honeybee. The other fortunate thing on this facility is a vegetable garden that the volunteer is in charge of, but the children can go and visit that. So they come to the bees first, and then I send them to the vegetable garden during season, of course, to see the bees actually pollinating the various plants there. So it's a very important lesson for them to see the bees actually at work producing food that they would be able to eat.
Is there, Anne Harmon, a most common question you get from children about bees? And is that different than the most common questions you get from adults about bees?
No, strangely enough, questions are the same. The children really come with a better background than the adults do because they've gone to school, and perhaps in their school they have studied something about insects and even about honeybees. So they're bringing with it, each of them, a background to be able to ask quite intelligent questions. The adults, if they ever heard about honeybees or studied honeybees, it was way in the past and anything is forgotten.
Is there a most common question that you get from those kids?
No, not really. It somewhat comes from opening up the hive itself. And what I point out in there, the honey that the bees are storing for themselves. And I would say there's no one common question from the children.
We're going next to Grotto's Carl. Thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for Anne Harmon, Bill Tice, and or Amanda Rose Newton.
Yes, hello. I'm pleased to talk with you today. I'm a former beekeeper, not in a big way, but just as avocationally. I had four or five hives probably for 15 years or so, and finally got out of it, it's been 20 years ago, because hives that once wintered in the Shenandoah Valley without too much effort started dying and weren't doing as well, and beekeepers that I knew had to administer antibiotics and things like that to try and bring their hives through the winter. And I didn't want to get into that, but my question is, what is the trajectory? I'm still very interested. I read articles on beekeeping, and most of what I read, frankly, is not good and talks about, the bad effects of pesticides and
and things we do in our rural areas and how tough it makes on bees in this part of the country.
Yeah, you're right on some levels. Beekeeping has been introduced with new challenges recently. It's in a lot of ways not the same that it was 60 years ago. And you're also right to bring up that there's all different kinds of players in this. You know, it's everything from pesticides to various pests, both primary pests as well as opportunistic secondary pests. There's just a bigger world of issues that you have to cope with becoming a beekeeper these days.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's much more difficult now to keep bees than it used to be. Since 1950, the United States has lost half of their bee population. It used to be about 5 million. Now it's down to 2.5 million. It's probably going to keep going down. The occurrence of pests that we haven't seen in this country before, like the varroa mite, tracheal mite, and the viruses that these mites bring with them, have caused beekeepers a lot of heartache.
But I think things are improving, even though this past winter here in Virginia did cause a lot of colony deaths. I think overall we are receiving better information from the scientists and more scientists working on the problems of bees and beekeeping. So I see it as a time of an upswing, and many people today, hobbyist beekeepers that have a few hives, 2, 3, 4, 5 hives, are able to keep their bees going through the winter quite successfully.
Carl, thank you so very much for your call. 888-WMRA-TALK, our phone number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Our guests, beekeepers Amanda Rose Newton, Anne Harmon, and Bill Tice. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And we're going next to Waynesboro. Lynn, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, thank you very much. I have a couple of small raised beds, and I haven't seen virtually any bees. How do I attract them to come and take care of my veggies?
Well, first of all, what types of veggies? Because tomatoes and peppers are not pollinated by honeybees, but by bumblebees. You might plant some bee-friendly flowers to help attract them. And if you're in an area where a lot of pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides are being used, it's possible that the native bee population has diminished, as well as the honeybee and bumblebee population.
But one of the things that you teach about is helping bees forage.
Yes, we need to really consider that bees are quite dependent upon plants. Without the plants providing their food, their pollen, and their nectar, which will become honey, then they cannot live. So the bee forage has really diminished. Farmers are planting out to the edge of the road. The highway departments mow grass and mow the roadsides so that the wild plants that many people would term weeds that are actually important plants for bees are no longer there. So it is essential that people start thinking about planting for bees. And
so what kinds of things do bees like most? What could Lynn or anybody else who has her concerns be planting somewhere in their yard to make life better for bees?
Well, there are a number of plants that actually I have a list of many different types of plants, which I am happy to provide to people with home gardens.
But give us a few off the top of your head.
Well, let's see.
And crocus. It's fine for Bill and Amanda Rose to jump in. And
red clover, white clover even.
Red clover is used by bumblebees, so that would be a good forage plant for that. But honeybees, white Dutch clover.
Mm-hmm. And Russian sage. I found small white or small purple flowers seem to be preferred for in general for honeybees.
And not just honeybees, but also butterflies and all different kinds of beautiful pollinators. So you'll get a whole hodgepodge of different things if you do
There's
plant flowers.
Something about the colors white and colors purple of flowers that helps?
It's all in the spectrum of sight that bees have, and they most see white. That's the most visible color for them.
Lynn, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. I hope that I can see some bees back this year.
Let us know.
All right.
Thanks so much. Well, to you on the other side of your radio, what do you think you already know about bees? What would you like to know? We've got this posted from Frank, who says, stories about declining bee populations seem to attribute the problem to disease and pesticides. Do your beekeeper guests know whether bee honey ever gets contaminated by pesticide? Are there ways to make sure that honey purchased in a store is safe?
The pesticides are not transferred to the honey. If a bee encounters a pesticide while foraging, she may very well die before she ever gets back to the hive. So we have not found pesticides as such in honey. We have found contamination from honeys from other countries, but that is an entirely different story. It is usually something that another country has, or the beekeeper in another country has treated their hive with, and it does transfer into honey.
Bill Tice, I saw you nodding your head there.
Well, they have found toxins in bees' wax. Wax being sticky tends to accumulate just about everything the bee drags back from the environment. And typically beekeepers will change out the wax every couple years when it starts to turn black, because the wax will contain toxins in the environment that would be detrimental to the hive in the long term. So the chemicals do get back to the hive, and they usually end up in the wax.
Amanda Rose Newton, the point that Frank makes about hearing about declining bee populations due primarily to disease and pesticides, how much concern should we have about declining bee populations? And is it your understanding that what Frank says is on target?
Oh, it's definitely significant enough at this point to raise suspicion and have people be generally interested and aware of what's going on with our honeybees. It's not only in this country. It's been noticed all over Europe, as well as other areas. So there definitely is a decline in honeybees going on. Whether it's solely related to pesticides and diseases, we haven't really been able to answer that. It seems like it's many, many, many different attributes that are going on. And again, it all follows the chain of the pesticide use and then, weakening the hives, and then having pests come in that normally aren't huge problems that are able to do more damage since the hives are weakened. There's all different kinds of culprits in this matter.
There's something called a small hive beetle that you've been studying?
Yes, which luckily you guys don't have such a huge deal with now, although it's probably going to become more prolific in the upcoming years. But
when you say you guys, you mean Virginia?
Yes, I mean Virginia. Down south, though, it's a whole different game.
Further south.
Yeah.
There's some people who think Virginia is south. But
that's right. So we're the capital.
You spent some time in Georgia.
Yeah. And down there, it's pretty severe. It's not a matter of, if you have it, it's when you get it. Everyone eventually gets them. And
so what are they? What do they do?
They're a secondary pest. They kind of come in when a hive is already kind of weakened because, as a general rule, bees don't like having other critters in their hive. They'll do whatever they can to get rid of it.
So what does this critter look like?
It looks like a little scarab beetle. It's a very, very tiny, tiny, shiny black beetle. You can see it with your eye, but it's about the size of a pinhead.
And it likes to go invade beehives?
Yes, it likes to live in them and eat all the different remains from the cells and so forth. They cause a lot of damage once they're in there. Their fecal matter is a big problem if you do honey production because it can cause distaste and discolor. So you can't really sell it after that point. And they're very hard to get rid of once they're already established.
Are they a threat to the lives of the bees or just to what it is that's commercially produced, the honey and the beeswax from the hives?
Well, that's a good question. It definitely stresses the bees out. We know that much. So whether they're willing to put up with it is another story.
Yeah, last year I saw small hive beetle for the first time in my hives, and I had quite a few of them. But I think this cold winter.
What did you do? How did you? If I was you and I was 6 years into beekeeping, I would be not at all happy when I saw that.
Well, there's traps that you can put in there. I've heard that there are towels that you can put on top of the hive bodies to trap the beetles. Basically, I looked at these things and I was shaking them out of the frames, and the chickens were eating them as they hit the ground. So that took care of those, but the cold winter, I think, really did a number on the hive beetles, at least maybe temporarily, because I haven't seen that many at all yet this year.
Yes, and they are originally from Africa, so they're not going to do so well in, colder conditions.
But they can winter over in the hive if it's a small population. One thing that can be done is people can keep chickens. If the beekeeper can have chickens running loose, that will stop the larval cycle of the small hive beetle.
We're going to continue talking about bees here on Virginia Insight in just a bit more than 1 minute. Almost impossible to hear that without thinking about bees. Anne Harmon has been keeping bees for almost 40 years now. She also teaches beekeeping at Verdon Adventure Bound in Culpeper County. Entomologist Amanda Rose Newton has been keeping beehives since her high school years in the early 2000s. Today, she's also an extension agent for Cooperative Extension in Rockbridge County. That means Bill Tice is the newbie in the group. The longtime computer programmer launched his beekeeping operation at his home outside of Bridgewater just 6 years ago. Currently, Bill also serves as president of the Shenandoah Valley Beekeepers Association. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight, and you've got this amazing display, Bill Tice, that you're going to be able to help people visualize through their radios.
Well, if you ever had an ant farm when you were a kid, an observation hive is almost like an ant farm.
This is called an observation hive.
Yeah, it's an observation hive.
And how big is that?
It's three frames of bees in this particular hive.
But is that like 4 feet tall?
Probably 2.5 feet tall. Okay, 2.5 square.
It just looks huge to me with all those bees. And do you have any idea how many bees are behind the glass there?
Well, it's hard to say. Probably a couple thousand. But normally a beehive will have 50,000 to 60,000, a healthy hive. This hive is basically for demonstration purposes and actually just for me to observe what's going on.
Now, you said near the beginning of the show, Bill Tice, that one of the things that kind of amazed you early on after you started keeping bees, and I think you started in 2008, is that you had a sense that the bees recognized you and almost like they had personalities in different bees, or at least different hives acted differently. Do you have a sense that these guys recognize you through the glass, or is that too much to ask?
I would imagine they can see me. They have five eyes, two of which are compound eyes, and they can see pretty well. I would imagine they can see me. But I have noticed when I feed the bees in the fall and or the spring sugar water, that after I've fed them and I'm out in the yard, the bees will be flying in front of my face, and if I hold my hand out, they'll land into my hand and walk around on it, which to me is unusual behavior because normally a bee will not do that. It's dangerous, for one thing. Dangerous to the bee, yeah. So the bees are actually, they know that I fed them. You know, I get that feeling that, and they do that every time I feed them. So it's not like a freak thing. And I think other beekeepers have noticed that as well.
So these 2,000 or so bees that are behind the glass that's inserted into this large, tall, wooden box that you've got here in the Virginia Insight studio, what are they doing?
Well, right now they are feeding, the worker bees are feeding larvae, a mixture of pollen and nectar, which we call bee bread. And all the bees that you see their little tails sticking out, they're in there feeding that larva. And then there are other bees cleaning the hive, cleaning out cells, capping cells that have honey on them, fanning the nectar to evaporate the water to make honey.
Said there are three cells, and it looks to me like the largest number of bees are the top cell.
Yeah, they're frames. They're three frames of bees.
Okay.
They're removable frames.
And then the smallest number are working down on the bottom cell.
Correct.
Are they doing something different that's, you know, less... a likable job on the bottom, and that's why there are less bees down there?
Well, every 3 weeks or so, I have to take frames out of this hive and either make new hives out of them or put them in another box because they would fill up this hive very quickly. So the last two frames here are actually pretty new. I put those in last week. So this frame here...
You're pointing to the top one,
the
where
top
the most
frame.
Bees are. Yeah.
Yeah, that frame has been here for... over a month, and it has probably more larvae in it, which is why you see more activity up top.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are these a particular kind of honeybee?
These are a mixture of Italian, Carniolans, maybe a little Russian. They're all interbred. I have no say over who the queen mates with.
But she mates with a lot.
Yeah,
of partners.
Well, hopefully, and that's one of the problems I've had is finding enough bees nearby for her to mate with sufficiently, because usually they'll mate with up to 10 or 12 male drones, and then they'll go back to the hive and lay their eggs for the remainder of their life until that hive swarms.
And the male drones die after mating.
After mating, yes, they die.
Now, Amanda Rose Newton, do I understand correctly that a queen bee may lay 1,000 or more eggs a day?
Yes, that's correct.
That's a lot of activity.
Yeah, it seriously is.
What else can you describe about the process of bee life?
Oh, it's fascinating, and I think that's really what draws a lot of people into the world of beekeeping is just all the social interaction that goes into play. Females have an important role in the hive. They're the ones that you're most likely to see out and about on a flower. It's never going to be a drone. They only leave the hive usually for mating, and that's about the gist of what they do. They mate and move on.
Onto the next life.
onto the next life, yes. Yes,
but it's the females that are called the worker bees.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, please don't stop. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
That's fine. Yeah, so, and everybody caters to the queen, and she puts out pheromones, and those are the chemical signals that kind of dictate the behavior of the hive.
Yeah, and the queen can determine if she wants to lay an egg for a drone or have it fertilized when it's laid. She actually has control over that.
Control over whether it will become a male or...
or an immature female, yes.
Yes. The sequence is really quite interesting because the queen, taken care of by the worker bees, she has what's called a retinue that groom her and feed her. She will lay eggs throughout most of the year, but she does take a rest in November and December in temperate climates. And then when the egg is laid, if it is to be a worker bee, it will go into the larval stages and finally a pupa. And when the adult bee emerges, she will then have a whole list of duties that she will perform as she ages. So she will start out being a cleaner bee, taking care of cleaning the hive. She then can start feeding the larva. After feeding the larva, she can progress to other tasks in the hive. And finally, after about 3 weeks of adult age, she can fly out and visit the flowers. Unfortunately, during the season of spring and summer, she will live only 6 weeks as an adult bee, a very short time.
I understand, Bill Tice, that one of your concerns personally, because you want to see bee populations gain in number and health, and also one of the most common questions you get once people find out that you're a beekeeper, has to do with swarming and what to do if people feel like there are too many bees in their yard or even getting into their homes.
Yeah, I get calls of people that have found swarms, and sometimes they say they would almost killed it, but then they heard about our club. And that is probably one thing I want to get out, is that if you see a swarm of bees, please don't kill it. We're doing enough harm to the honeybee already. Any beekeeper would, most beekeepers would really love to have a swarm. It's free bees for them, even though it is an old queen that's in that swarm. You know, go to virginiabeekeepers.org and you'll find a map of Virginia. You can click on the county and you can find all the different clubs in the state. And then you can track down pretty easily who to contact nearest you to come get the bees. Another thing is I get calls from people with bees in their home and they want to get rid of the bees out of their home. That can be sometimes a difficult thing to do depending on where they are. But an ounce of prevention in this case is worth a pound of cure. If you inspect your home, look for holes or cracks in the molding, places where bees could get behind. If there are large spaces, like say a cubic foot space behind that hole, you're really inviting bees into your house. So take the caulk gun and plug up those holes, and you can most likely avoid this problem.
Right, and the same can be really said about any kind of unwanted insect in your home. Just caulking and sealing is the best preventative method you can do. So in addition to bees, if you don't want roaches or any of those good things, definitely get the caulk gun out.
Yes, I would say that is the best preventive. But also, you may wish to preserve some of the critters that are invading. I think that calling a beekeeper for bees that have moved into your house is the most important thing you can do for those. I realize that there are other insects that people do not want in their home, such as cockroaches. And cleanliness really does help. However, I have found that spiders are catching the brown marmorated stink bugs that are invading my house. So at this point, I am preserving the spiders, hoping that they can catch a few of the stink bugs. So there is a balance that we can preserve, which I think is an important thing to do.
We're going to run out of time pretty quickly here, but Lee in Front Royal, if you could make your question or comment quick for us, please.
My son lives in Strasbourg and does beekeeping as a hobby with about 5 hives, and has trouble with bears destroying him. What is your suggestion of how to prevent this and still keep bees close to your residence?
I tell every beekeeper, first you build your bear fence, and then you get your bees. If you do not have a bear fence, you will have no bees. The bear, especially in the springtime, wants the protein of the larva. It isn't the honey. Sometimes they will even not eat the honey. But there are bears in every county of Virginia.
And describe a bear fence.
You can actually find instructions for bear fence. It has to be an electric fence with a cattle strength fencer unit on it. And you will have at least 3 electric wires a foot apart. If you want to put 4 wires, starting the first one 1 foot from the ground, and then wires a foot apart. And the fence must be enough distance away from the hive that the bear cannot reach his arm through it and grab, because the bear is very, very clever and very resourceful.
Lee, thanks so much for your call. Bill Tice, you suggested that we do this discussion today. We've got less than 30 seconds left. Is there something you'd like people to know, some action you'd like people to take that relates to bees that we haven't touched on that you can explain in 20 seconds?
Well, the only thing I forgot to mention is if you do have bees in your home, probably the worst thing you can do is try to kill them with insecticide, because if you do succeed in doing that, which is unlikely, then all the honey in your house will become available for ants and other pests. So you'll be causing more of a problem.
Our guests have been Rockingham County-based beekeeper and president of the Shenandoah Valley Beekeepers Association, Bill Tice, plus Rappahannock County-based beekeeper and president of the Virginia State Beekeepers Association, Ann Harmon, as well as Rockbridge County-based beekeeper, entomologist, and extension agent for Rockbridge Cooperative Extension, Amanda Rose Newton. Thank you all so very much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Virginia Insights executive producers Matt Bingay, associate producers Bob Levicky, Terry Ward, and Dan Easley. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. Postings of Virginia Insight available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about each of our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.